Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the subject of property when we come back. Well, the lessons on courtroom strategy and procedure that you hear on this program are just a small part of my two-week basic courtroom strategy and procedure school. Now, this school includes lessons on what to do and what not to do at the scene of the crime or the alleged crime, and what should you say to the police or the investigators, and what should you not say to the police. And you'll learn how to conduct yourself in your case at bail setting, arraignment, pleadings, motion, hearings, trial, and appeal. And you'll learn how to ask questions, cross-examine adverse witnesses, select a jury, introduce exhibits and evidence, and conduct discovery. Do the legal research, and then follow the rules of court. There are 28 elements to learn in courtroom strategy and procedure, and rule one is that all of the evidence that your opponent's ever going to use against you is going to be furnished by you. So the rule is keep your mouth shut. Don't say anything, and then shut up. Now, after Rule 1's out of the way, we can get to the real business of winning your case. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, it's free of charge. You can call and order one right now. Now, our school, courtroom strategy and procedure, is also available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the archives page, and then you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. All right, last time we were up to the point where we're going to talk about the 14th Amendment. Citizenship is an important element in this overall game. Most people value their citizenship. In fact, people from all over the world come to the United States, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand because they want citizenship in those four countries. Well, why aren't they looking to go to China, North Korea, Russia, or Siberia, or someplace? It's because of the legal system. The legal system in the Anglo-Saxon countries is such that it provides for an economic freedom that produces wealth and prosperity. Now, that's what everybody really wants, is wealth and prosperity. They really don't give a rat's you-know-what for the legal system. But when we had the Anglo-Saxon legal system in Rhodesia, for instance, Rhodesia was a first-world country with a monetary system on par with the United States. Once the blacks took over Rhodesia, changed the name to Zimbabwe, introduced Marxism throughout the Ten Commandment model, they have degenerated. Rhodesia is now a basket case. They've got inflation, their economy's a shambles, and the people are living off of the largesse of the world at large. In other words, they'd starve to death if we didn't feed them. It isn't a black or white issue. In those countries where whites adopt Marxism, socialism, communism, they too develop a 10-plank economic system so that they too can descend into poverty. So in the Western countries of Western Europe, in the United States and Canada and so on, citizenship is a very valuable asset or commodity. And people come from all over. They swim across the Rio Grande River. They sneak across our borders here. They're sneaking into Europe from Africa. Anything to get away from where they are and what they're doing. They're willing to give up their citizenship in their country so that they can get into these Anglo-Saxon countries because of the prosperity that's there. But the prosperity isn't there because of some magic. It's there because of the Ten Commandment economic model. And the Anglo-Saxons don't understand or recognize that simple, salient fact. So they too have adopted Marxism. And the more Marxism they adopt, then the poorer their economy functions. Until finally they too, wanting to emulate all of the nations around them, will descend into the pit of poverty so that they can stand in line and share the shortage. Now, citizenship is membership in a political society, and they call it citizenship. It implies a duty of allegiance on the part of the member and a duty of protection on the part of society. These are reciprocal obligations, one being a compensation for the other. The term citizen refers to a constituent member of a body politic owning or owing allegiance to that sovereign. So the term citizen is frequently used synonymously with that of people, and it refers to a constituent member of that sovereignty, that is, a member of the political civil state entitled to all of its privileges. Notice privileges, not rights. A citizen, in the popular and appropriate sense of the term, is someone who by birth, naturalization, or otherwise, is a member of an independent political society called a state, kingdom, or empire, and as such is subject to its laws and entitled to its protection in all of his rights incident to that relation. So citizenship is a valuable commodity if there's something that you're seeking, something that you desire, like welfare, food stamps, aid to families with dependent children. You want to live off of somebody else. You want somebody else's sweat and labor to produce what you want to consume. Citizenship is very valuable. Now, on the other hand, as a citizen belonging to this political organization, if you're one of the producers, well, then from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. So they take from you and give it to the guy over here that doesn't have as much. That's what Barack Obama sold health care for and sold it with. Think about it. He came out and he said very plainly, he said, if you're making under $250,000 a year, $250,000, this isn't going to affect you at all. We're going to tax the rich. We're going to take from Bill Gates and George Soros and Warren Buffett and the rich guys over here, and we're going to set up this health care program and give it to you. That's what appeals to all of the proponents of national health care. Well, let's put it this way. What if Barack Obama came up and he said, no, look, what we need is national health care insurance. Everybody in the country ought to have it. And everybody in the country ought to pay his fair share. So everybody in the country has to pay for all of the health care that he buys. Do you think that would sell? Well, hell, we already have that. That's the strict liability program that God himself requires. You want a new Lexus? Get out there and work and earn the money and buy it. But nobody owes you a Lexus. You're going to have to buy your own. That's why we don't buy nearly as many Lexus as we do Chevrolets and Fords and Volkswagens and so on. It's because they cost so much. We don't want to put forth the effort to buy one of those expensive cars, a Rolls Royce or something like that. Now, the government comes along and says, hey, listen, here's what we're going to do. We're going to use the police power and we're going to take from that guy over there and give it to you. Oh, you love that, don't you, Bob? Now, if we come along and say, Bob, we're going to take it from you and give it to Tom, well, that's not such a good plan, is it? And that's why we have a law that says, thou shalt not steal. And when we violate that law, thou shalt not steal, then we descend into the pit of poverty, because the punishment, the penalty for the violation of that law is poverty. Stand in line and share the shortage. We've tested it in China and Russia, and we've tested it all over the world. Hell, we're testing it right now in the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and Western Europe. We're practicing socialism. And the more of it that we adopt, the poorer we become, the more debt we have to service, until finally we're at the point now worldwide we have more debt than we can service. And it translates into a shortage of the actual goods and services on the shelf. Here in the United States, for instance, if we took all the money that we Americans possess, all the wealth that we've got, and we went into Walmart and said, okay, we're going to convert this wealth, this money, into goods, all of us combined could get 2%. That's it. We've got 98% more money out there than we have goods on the shelf, and our government is printing more money every day, which dilutes the purchasing power and creates more inflation, higher prices, and so on. And we love it. We love it. We wallow in it, and we actually believe that we're going to prosper, that debt's going to make us rich. There's a rude awakening coming here, boys and girls, and very shortly now, because the ball is already rolling downhill, gathering speed. Now, the 14th Amendment came in this country in 1868. Around the world, you're doing the same thing, but you've got a different law that went into effect at a different time to dilute the equity of your laws. So let me show you what happened here in the United States, and then you can look into your own history books and find out, well, what happened in my country and about when, and then take a look at the results that come from it. Remember the Dred Scott v. Sanford case, 9 How 393, and like authority provides in effect that the state citizen is immune to any and all governmental attacks and procedure absent contract. By 1868, to remedy this, the 14th Amendment was adopted, which also gave corporations rights, which they did not have prior to 1868. And then when that was coupled with repeal of colonial state constitutions, citizenship provisions, and then not allowing any such provisions in any of the later states' constitutions, it had the effect of lowering whites to the level of blacks, and it made everybody a national state bondservant, subject to the corporate state-controlled economy, and all of them derived their citizenship from the 14th Amendment. Now, the 14th Amendment constitutes the breach of the contract, that is, our Constitution, and it's a unilateral breach. It's a breach, and it's certain supposed benefits that are attached thereto, you know, things like Social Security and welfare and food stamps, which even though this unilateral breach by one side, that is, government, if we acquiesce therein, it makes us beneficiaries thereof. So they offer this to you. And human beings are motivated by these five motivators. If you've got a pen and paper, why don't you write this down? Because if you can't control your five motivators, you can rest assured that somebody's going to use it, and they're going to jerk your chain, and they're going to control you by your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. Government uses vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear, just like any salesman, to go out here and to lure you into a contract whereby you waive your constitutional rights and we can control you through regulation. That's all that's happened. You made a bad choice, joined up with Social Security, you joined the Army, and now you're stuck. So the problem is, well, how do we get out? We made a mistake. We're the prodigal son. We went off and left our inheritance behind. Now what do we do to get back to where we were? It's expensive. It's going to cost you some time, effort, energy, and money. It's not impossible. You can do it. God himself insists that you do it. Well, I guess if you want the benefits to come from or flow from the Ten Commandment model, you're going to do it. Most people aren't. They're pretty satisfied with the status quo. They'll stay on the Titanic until the water is about ankle deep, and then they'll hit the panic switch and run for the stern. By then, it's too late. Now, before the ship sinks, before it gets into the position where there's no salvation, you need to take action. You got to do something constructive and upfront. Now, as brief as possible, let me summarize it. Because without something more, the 14th Amendment and its subsidiary codes, these corporations, aliens and foreigners, have no rights whatsoever. Well, I don't have any rights that can be enforced in any American court, including property rights. Now, since there is no longer any state substantive citizenship in these state constitutions, everyone is treated as if they're aliens or foreigners, with at best only 14th Amendment citizenship. And that citizenship is never defined by any substantive law, such as our common law. And since mere possessory, common law title of property is inferior title. Remember, we took a look at this thing called superior title the other day. That's Uniform Commercial Code title. The government retains title to all of the property that its corporations and its bond servants working for those corporations mine, refine, manufacture, and sell to consumers. You buy the car and you think, well, this is my car, but it isn't, because the certificate of origin goes to the state, the superior title. All you get back is a certificate of title. The certificate of title tells you what that is. It's a piece of paper that tells you that a title does exist. That's why it's called a certificate. When we used to have Federal Reserve notes, which were called silver certificates, it said on there, this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private, and is redeemable in silver at any Federal Reserve Bank or at the U.S. Treasury. Well, they took that off now, but it used to be. But the point I'm making is that it was a silver certificate. It wasn't the silver. It was the certificate that represented the silver that was on deposit in the Treasury. So you have a certificate of title to your car. It's not the title to the car. It's the certificate that tells you that on deposit someplace at the Department of Revenue, there is a title, but you don't have it. Now, because we have abandoned our Ten Commandment model, thou shalt not steal, and we have adopted the abolition of property and land and the application of all rent of land to public purposes through this 14th Amendment and collateral legislation. It's not the only legislation, but it's part of it. Social Security is part of it. The income tax is part of it, which draws us into the second plank to the manifesto, which calls for a heavy progressive income tax and a free education for all children in public schools. And now here in the United States, now we've got national health care insurance. All right. Well, that comes from citizenship. Citizenship in this political entity called the United States of America, which people from all over the world are just working their hearts out to join. They want to get in on the goodies. Now, God is a competing sovereign, and he comes along and he says, now look, I'm the sovereign, and I got a law here that says you shall have no other gods before me, no other sovereigns. Don't worship the United States of America and practice this communism. Practice my Ten Commandment plan, which is about as popular as AIDS at an office Christmas party. Nobody wants to buy into that. Hey, we want the real deal, don't we? Well, all right, we bought into the real deal. Now, you're going to have to pay for that real deal. And here in the United States, the Obama plan is going to be paid for. And it's not going to be paid for by George Soros. It's going to be paid for by Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife when they walk into McDonald's and buy a bag of French fries or a hamburger. You can rest assured that McDonald's is not going to pay $75,000 per franchise to provide you with your health care insurance. And they're going to raise their prices is what they're going to do to cover the costs. And George Soros and Bill Gates and Warren Buffett don't eat at McDonald's. They eat at Antoine's. Now, unfortunately for George, he's going to have to pay his fair share too, because Antoine's isn't going to pay the health insurance costs of their waiters and their kitchen staff either. So oysters Rockefeller that were $80 a plate are now going to be $85 a plate. George, Bill, that's all. The difference, though, being that George, Bill, and Warren have access to the extra $5 because they're just going to raise the prices for their product, and the rest of us don't have that luxury. You don't just tell your boss, hey, raise my wages $5 an hour so I can pay for this health care through my purchases at McDonald's. It's a one-way street. The rich don't pay, and we do, which gives us every reason why we ought to stay away from the citizenship in these political organizations like China, North Korea, Russia, the United States, and Canada, and so on. Now, when we were born, we were citizens, all of us Anglo-Saxons, in the Kingdom of Israel. We had a covenant, we had a contract that Moses negotiated with God up on Mount Sinai. and it inured to the heirs and the signs forever. Those of us that are heirs and the signs, we own it. It's a property right. It's the subject of property. And that's what rights are all about. That old covenant contract is a property right that inures to the heirs and the signs forever. Now, our problem is we've been induced to throw that right away so that we could participate in these franchises, privileges, and immunities. These 108 benefits that we get from Social Security, you know, like unemployment insurance and so on. Well, now, look, if that's what you want in life, you want unemployment insurance and a safety net, as old George Bush used to say, you know, he said the safety net. You know, no, I don't want the safety net, George. I want my rights and I want my labor. My labor produces much more than Social Security is going to give me. Thank you very much. I'll just keep all of my own labor, utilize it for my own personal benefit, and then you go do the same. Now, what these guys have done is that they've gotten all of us in on the game early on. So they here in the United States, you know, the minute you're born, they want to give you a Social Security number. That way you'll never ask when you get to be 18, you know, why have I got this Social Security number? What's it all about? What does it mean? Nobody here in the United States ever reads the contract. We're told to. Boy, I'll tell you, when I was a kid, everybody told me, don't you sign anything until you take it to your lawyer and have him read it and explain it to you. See, we were too damn dumb to read for ourselves, so we had to take it to a lawyer. But anyway, as time progressed along, and I grew up to be a big boy, I got credit cards. I never read those credit card contracts, and neither have you. All of you people out there with credit cards, not a one of you people have ever read the contract to the credit card. And the reason I can make that statement is because I have read those contracts, and I can tell you, from my own personal observations and experience, anybody out there whose intelligence is anywhere near the speed limit, if you read that contract, you will not sign it. Nobody in his right mind would sign a Visa or MasterCard contract after he read it. That's why they write those up in obfuscated terms and in small fine print so that it discourages you from reading it. And then when you don't read it, you sign it. Now you're bound to the terms and conditions, and people complain and they cry. And they say, oh, the bank, they raised my interest rate. And the bank did this and the bank did that and something else. You know, if somebody screwed me, blued me, and tattooed me once, shame on him. But if the same guy screws me, blues me, and screws me over the second time, then it's shame on me. So you know, you people out there with credit cards and you're bitching about the credit card company over there, you're the proximate cause of your own injury. Sit down, shut up, and pay your bill. Same thing with you homeowners out there. You know, nobody stuck a gun at your head and told you that you had to sign this mortgage contract. You were induced by your own greed. You said, I'm going to buy this house, and I don't care what the hell the cost is because I'm going to sell it at a profit later and cut a fat hog in the back. And then when the prices collapsed, you found out that, hey, wait a minute, maybe this paper money, maybe this 10-plank model isn't as good as I thought it was. Now you're on the hook for it. Well, they sucked you in, all right. Now, if you got one of these mortgages over here, let me tell you something about property and property rights as it relates to these mortgages while I'm on the subject. Up in Ohio, I think it was 2 years ago, there were some foreclosures that came down by the Deutsche Bank. Now, remember, Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan and these ratings company, they put together these CDOs and investment vehicles, they call them, with these mortgages, these subprime mortgages. And then they sold them all over the world and screwed people out of their money. Well, all right, well, the Deutsche Bank, they bought some of them over there, and they're sitting here with this worthless paper on these houses that are going into foreclosure. So the way it worked was, let's just take an example. Like Bank of America, they've got 50 mortgages over here that they've sold. They bundle those up, and they sell them to some investor over in Abu Dhabi or someplace. And then the bank collects the mortgage payments and then sends this guy his share, you know, his interest off of his investment. Well, now, when these mortgages went south, the bank over here has to foreclose on these mortgages. Well, some enterprising guy up in Ohio comes into court with a quiet title action, and he says, wait a minute, I'm not in default here. The bank doesn't own this house. Got that? And then he goes a step further, and he says, the guy that bought this collateral debt obligation, he doesn't own the house either. All you people out there with mortgages now that are going into foreclosure, listen up. Pay attention here. Remember the story with little Georgie? When Bank of America sells the collateral debt obligation, they alienate themselves from the property. Bank of America doesn't own it anymore. It's passed on to the next holder in due course. So the CDO then passes to the Sheikh in Saudi Arabia. Now the Sheikh over there doesn't own the house either. He doesn't have a deed. He doesn't have a recorded interest. He's got an investment paying him interest, paper money, but he doesn't have the property. Now, who has the property? Well, it's the guy that's living in the house. The guy that's living in the house is in possession, and possession's 9 points of the law. Now, the bank alienated their property right by selling the property through the CDO. The guy that has the CDO didn't record the deed. Now, the guy in the house has the best claim. He doesn't have a deed either. And what he needs is a quiet title action so he can get a court-ordered deed. Well, anyway, the guy in Ohio won his case. When I saw that, my wife, who's a real estate broker from years past, she said, and she brought this up, and she said, well, who in the hell owns that house with these CDOs and all of these subprime loans? And I thought about it, and I said, well, I don't know. I don't know who owns it. So the Supreme Court up in Ohio said, well, we can tell you who owns it. The guy's living in it. So Bank of America the other day, they came up with a neat plan. They said, well, we're going to have a debt moratorium. We want to do something for these homeowners out here. And so you come in here and you sign this new contract, Mr. Homeowner. And in this contract, you don't have to pay us any interest and you don't have to pay us any payments for 9 months. If at the end of 9 months you haven't found a job and you can't make your payments, then you agree that you will voluntarily leave the house and we don't have to evict you. You agree that you'll voluntarily give us title to the house and give it back to the bank because we don't have it because we already sold it to the Sheikh in Abu Dhabi. And the Sheikh in Abu Dhabi doesn't have a deed and he hasn't recorded it. And so you're the owner of the house because you're in it. But we don't want you to know that. So therefore, come on in here and sign up. Yeah, those lawyers there at Bank of America, they don't sleep. They're out here. They're coming up with every new angle that they can to screw you. So if you've got a mortgage and you're sitting in a house and you're facing foreclosure, stay right there. Don't move out. Make the sheriff move you out and then come in, sue the bank, sue the sheriff for wrongful conversion of property. Wrongful conversion. In old common law terms, it's called a trover. A trover. It might even be a replevin if you get the sheriff involved in it, but at least you've got a trover action. In case you don't know what that is, go look that up. You'll find it in some dusty old leather-bound law book. Now, we don't have any substantive or inalienable rights left. We're living in government-owned homes, driving government-owned cars, and we're wearing government-owned shorts. And as far as they and their courts are concerned, noting that one's life and liberty in person are meaningless without property rights. Got that, boys and girls? Without property rights, you know, you're nothing but a bondservant. Now, I'm not going to say that you're a slave. That word slave is being used incorrectly. There is a social status called slavery, but here in the United States, we don't allow that. We don't even allow bond servitude here in the United States anymore. Private ownership of people is banned. Only public ownership of human beings is allowed in the United States. Public ownership. No private ownership is left. 13th Amendment bars that. That doesn't mean that you're free. It just means that I can't own you. The state of Washington owns you. All right, now that's the 14th Amendment story. Now let's take this a step further. Let me give you a break here, first of all, and let me tell you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and then we'll get on to adhesion contracts. And I'll show you another little piece to the puzzle over here as we're dealing with this thing of property. But meanwhile, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements and recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing and recommending are necessarily going to endorse and recommend the Law Hour and editorial review. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour, they could be, they don't have to be, but they may be hostile, they may be political, they can be religious or economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans. And they may not agree with us, and we may not agree with them. Their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about property and property rights. Well, back in 1933, Congress took our gold away in an unusual move. It was called House Joint Resolution 192. Later, it was codified in a statute. Now, the reason for doing that, they wanted to implement the first plank to the Communist Manifesto and alienate Americans from their property so that they could tax us under the second plank to the Communist Manifesto with a heavy progressive income tax. The plan worked perfectly. Worked like a shot. Just like this national health care insurance. Worked like a shot. What you do is you appeal to people's vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear, and they'll fall for it every time. That's the way communism and socialism has been sold over the past 5,000 or 6,000 years. It has never failed yet. So if you want to bet, you want to bet with the socialists, bet with the communists, you can't lose. Well, you'll lose over the long haul because there's another entity, another guy with an agenda. We call him God. He's got an agenda. And he says he's going to put it into full force and effect. And when that happens, there's going to be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, coast to coast and border to border. But you don't have to worry about that coming anytime soon. I mean, that isn't coming day after tomorrow or next week or next month. It's just coming at some point in time down the road, and none of us know just exactly when it's going to drop out of the sky and punch us in the nose, but it's coming. Now, let me flip over here to a little section here called adhesion contracts. Here we go. Adhesion contracts. Boy, this is a neat one. Patriots in the patriot community, they've been battling these statutes that require specific performance for years and with a wide and varied results. And we've been asking, hey, where's the contract that gives government all these powers over us? And we receive nothing but deafening silence. Bill Avery is the guy that discovered this. Let's give credit where credit's due. The guy's name is Bill Avery. Back in 1939, he was a young lawyer, fresh out of law school, went to work for Standard Oil in California. And he took a look at these New Deal programs that were being instituted. And then he asked himself, well, how in the hell does the government's police power attach to the Social Security income tax and these government programs that Roosevelt is sticking through Congress? And it dawned on him, he said, the answer is contract. So coming right out of the chute, you know, with Social Security, Stuart Machine versus Halvern challenged the constitutionality of Social Security. You know, they said, well, you can't do that. That's unconstitutional. Supreme Court comes back and says, it's not unconstitutional. Now, notice the Supreme Court didn't say it was constitutional. They just said, hey, it's not unconstitutional. And the reason they said that is because it doesn't have anything to do with the Constitution. It has to do with contract. And contract is protected at Article 1, Section 10. Come on, guys. Contract, Article 1, Section 10. Go look it up. Government is barred from impairing the obligation of contract. So if you want to enslave yourself by joining the army, you're free to do that. In fact, a free man must have the capacity to enslave himself. Think about it. If you're calling yourself a free man and you don't have the capacity to enslave yourself, then you're not free, are you? So, you know, let's wake up and smell the coffee. A free man must have the capacity to enslave himself. He ought not to. He's a fool if he does, but, you know, people join the army all the time. So the whiz kids back in the 30s said, we'll never get a constitutional amendment through here to tax these people with an income tax. What we have to do is to camouflage this tax, this first and second plank to the Communist Manifesto, and they camouflaged it under Social Security by offering you, appealing to your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear, and offering you all of these 108 benefits. And then you sucked right into it and you bought it. But when you bought Social Security, you bought the income tax to pay for it. The government doesn't have anything to give you. So every time they give you something, they have to, first of all, take something away from you. They have to have tax to pay for it. So when you're asking the question, where did the government get these powers, it comes from contract. That's where it's coming from. It's not coming from your Constitution. And government is not violating any of your constitutional rights. Just picture it like this. Let's suppose one day you're not feeling too good. So you go up to the Napa State Hospital. You know, that's the hospital for the insane. And you just walk in and say, hey, I'm not feeling too good and I'd like to check in. And they'll hand you a form and you sign it. Now, if you walk into a state mental hospital and you sign the form, it's the prima facie evidence that you're insane. It's right there. The only people that sign themselves in the mental hospital are people who are insane. And so they'll let you in and they'll let you walk around on the green grass and smell the flowers and watch the fountains. And now you're in there for a while, and pretty soon you get to feeling pretty good, and you walk over and say, hey, I'm feeling real good. I think I'll go home now. Now, it is true that an insane person can check himself into a mental hospital, but it is not true that an insane person can check himself out of the mental hospital. Can you grasp that one, Bob? It's like a Venus flytrap. You can check in, but you don't check out. Now, you can be released from the mental hospital, but your guardian's going to have to release you, and he'll decide when you're feeling better, when you're cured. Now, what a revolting development that's turned out to be, because, you know, you've already signed yourself into the mental hospital, named the government as your guardian, and the government is your guardian. Now, it's not impossible to get out, but the only avenue available is fraud. It comes under what's known as the statute of frauds. Government sucked you in 1935 and closed the door in 1939. And so, once in, always in. So when Bill Avery saw that, he said, uh-oh, let me warn people and tell them what the problem is. Now, here on the Law Hour, we're not here to persuade you that we're right. We're just here to put out information. And then we trust that you're smart enough to use the information in your own self-interest. For instance, I'm not trying to get people out of the mental hospital. Maybe they like it there. Who in the hell am I to tell you people that you should leave the mental hospital and the security blanket the government provides? Most people are very happy and satisfied inside the mental hospital, smelling the flowers and walking on the green grass. They don't want freedom. They don't want responsibility. They're perfectly satisfied when somebody tells them when to get up in the morning, when to go to bed at night, and what to do in between. They get up and they go to work, they punch the time clock, do what they're told, go home, pop a beer, sit down, watch the boob tube, and everything's fine. And if you're happy doing that, hell, I don't want to disturb your lifestyle here. But here on my telephone, every once in a while, somebody calls up and says, oh my God, Mr. Gordon, I got to get out of here. What? You want to get out of the mental hospital? Why do you want to do that? I always ask them, why do you want to get out? Because I want to be responsible. I want to be free. Well, okay. Let me give you a couple of more little surprises here. Where's the contract that gives government these powers? Well, for years, the states have been passing statutes that should only be administrative requirements for those whom they have the power to regulate. Now, in order to enforce those administrative statutes upon everyone, the state simply made criminal statutes out of their administrative requirements. Then they gave the police the power to arrest for these violations of those statutes. Now, if an officer had no power to arrest, how many people would get a driver's license? Without criminal sanctions, this type of law would be unenforceable, as the vast majority of people would eventually not comply. However, over a period of years, like the camel sticking his nose in the tent and going to public school, we've all become accustomed to having a license for almost everything we do, to the point that the majority of people simply assume that it must be for the good of society and that we have licenses, and so everyone must have a license. So when a jury hears a license issue, the defendant must be guilty. And the reason is, that since I have to have a license, then so does he. And they simply cannot comprehend of anyone driving a car without a license. Now, the driver's license is a good example of government regulation over all of us by contract. These contracts create the category of victimless crime, of which the number is growing daily, and every patriot has had or will have one of these contract crimes to contend with. At some point in your life, it'll be your marriage license and a divorce. It'll be your business license over OSHA or the EPA. It'll be your driver's license concerning driving down the road too fast or running a stop sign or something. Now, you know, you're the product of all of the events that have transpired in your life, and all you know is what comes into your computer, your mind, through your five senses. So, first of all, we're going to get control of education. I started that back in the 1830s and 40s, and once I got control of education, now they simply educate you to be a bondservant. They don't have to capture anybody anymore. We just create customers for the insurance industry by teaching and training them from the time they're little children up that you can't live without insurance. We teach people to be customers of the bank. Every night on the Lehr News Hour, they'll have some kind of a story that deals with the economy. And they deal with the stories right here in the mainstream press with the excesses that have been going on over the last 25 or 30 years, perpetrated by banks and ratings agencies and credit card issuers and so on. I mean, I don't think that there's a night that goes by that I don't see a story somewhere in the mainstream press about the excesses and the criminal behavior of these financial institutions. It may be government, it may be Bank of America, it may be, you know, the ratings agencies giving 3A credit ratings for junk bonds or anything that you can think of. And do the people close their bank accounts and stop doing business with these institutions? Do people resign their voting registration and say, well, I'm not going to participate in that kind of criminal activity? Hell no. It's the only thing they know. They're not going to give that up. And so they go out here, and in the elections, they vote in Team A and Team B. Here in the United States, Team A being the Democrats and Team B being the Republicans. And right now, Team A is in office, and pretty soon we're going to put Team B back in this November. Everybody's ticked off now, so they're going to vote in Team B. And then it won't be long until Team B screws you over, and then you'll go back to Team A. Nobody ever thinks about Team C, D, E, and F. Never enters their mind. They can't. They can't. They've already been to public school, and they're already programmed. They can only think Team A and Team B. That's all that's in there. And that's all that's ever been. I'm an old man, and I'm telling you right now, I've never heard of anybody voting for Team C, D, or E. Now, there's a few lunatic fringers out there that vote for Team C, D, and E, but they're not going anywhere. All right, now, that being the case, then, what is an adhesion contract? Contracts of adhesion. One of the great generalizations about social history is the thesis of Sir Henry Maine that the history of progressive societies, and you could translate that socialist and communist society, may be described as a movement from status to contract. We have moved from status, that is rights under the Ten Commandment model, to contract. We've got a contract with somebody now. You're a member of a labor union, you got a contract. You got a driver's license, you got a contract. You got a job at General Motors, you got a contract. Now, through all of its course, it's been distinguished by the gradual dissolution of family dependency and growth of the individual obligation in its place. The society is gradually substituted for the family as the unit of which civil law takes account. So, you know, God gives us a law that says, honor your father and mother. It's the law, the fifth commandment, that protects the family and creates the family unit for the purposes of trade, commerce, business, and industry. And we've come along and said, no. We're going to get a marriage license. We're going to give our state political authorities power over families so that they can come in here and take our children away from us and put them in foster homes if we don't educate them the way the state wants them educated. That's just one. And then we're going to change the family unit to the corporate unit, and then we're all going to go work for Bill Gates at Microsoft and get, you know, government health care through Blue Cross, paid for by Warren Buffett. Well, that's what we're hoping for, isn't it? Nor is it difficult to see what is the tie between man and man, which replaces by degrees those forms of reciprocity and rights and duties which have their origin in the family. And that's contract. And that's taken from Maine's Ancient Law and Contracts, page 163 through 165. If you want to get a copy of this, it comes from the 43 Columbia Law Review, page 640, published in 1943. This isn't something new, by the way. It's been around for a long time. This is back in the days when we were instituting this 10-plank program under the Roosevelt administration. That's the purpose behind it. You don't need to be concerned about communism taking over the United States. If that's been a concern to you, banish it from your mind. All 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto are in full force and effect in the United States of America. You've been practicing these 10 planks all of your life. The only exceptions to that would be somebody born before 1933. If you were born before 1933, you might have lived and might have practiced the 10 Commandment model at some point in time. But for all of you people born after 1933, you were born into a communist society. You've been practicing communism from that day to this. I'm just suggesting that you take a look at it and ask yourself, is this really what I want to do? And if you decide that yes, it is, well, stick with the program. You're doing fine. There aren't any problems out there. If you're dissatisfied with the communist program, you might want to make a change. And then if you do, we have a constitution in force, and we have the Ten Commandment model that you can go back to. I think it's a better model. I went back to it. It produces more money, more happiness, more success, and everything that I want in life. But, you know, let me warn you, I'm 70 years old and I cannot retire. I have to work until the day I die. That's one of the downsides. I cannot get unemployment insurance. So if I don't work, I don't eat. That's one of the downsides. I have to be 100% responsible for my own actions. So I can't have insurance so that somebody else can be responsible for my cancer or my heart attack or my pacemaker. None of you people out there have any duty, obligation, or responsibility to take care of my health or to pay my wife for my death. I have to be 100% responsible for myself. That's another downside. Now, there's quite a few of those downsides. Now, on the plus side, when I work, everything that I make is mine, and I don't pay income tax and Social Security. Got that? All right. Now, that's one of the upsides. Downside is, if I, for some reason I can't feed myself or take care of myself, there's no unemployment, no welfare, no food stamps. I just saw a piece here the other day, and the international forecaster, Bob Chapman, reported one person in eight here in the United States. One person out of every eight is on food stamps. I'm happy to respond by telling you that I am not on food stamps. And if I wanted them, I couldn't get them. I don't have a Social Security number. What in the hell am I going to do? All right, so now with that little piece of information, with the decline of the free enterprise system due to the innate trend of competitive capitalism toward monopoly, the meaning of contract has radically changed in our society. Society, when granting freedom of contract, does not guarantee that all of the members of the society will be able to make use of contract to the same extent. On the contrary, the law, by protecting the unequal distribution of property, does nothing to prevent freedom of contract from becoming a one-sided privilege. Therefore, society, by proclaiming freedom of contract, guarantees that it will not interfere with the exercise of power by contract. Freedom of contract enables enterprisers to legislate by contract, and what is even more important, to legislate in a substantially authoritarian manner without using the appearance of authoritarian forms. Standard contracts in particular could thus become effective instruments in the hands of powerful industrial and commercial overlords, enabling them to impose a new feudal order of their own making upon a vast host of vassals. Unquote. So Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan, these huge corporate entities, multinational corporations, are able to use contract to enable them to impose a new feudal order upon the citizens of America, Canada, and Australia. That's what they've done. These big corporations out there control our economy, like it or lump it. They can torpedo it and put you into poverty in the morning. They're going upside down anyway, so it's coming. But if they wanted to, they could do it. Just like the Chinese, if they want to torpedo the Western economies, all they got to do is start selling the bonds on the open market, and all of us here in the West are dead. Zombies. That's the kind of power that they have. I don't think that's good. I think that you and I ought to reconsider when we tell our God, nevertheless, we will have a king like all the nations around us. Hey, I'm out of time. I got to give you a reminder here that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.